Welcome to Torah Imecha Parsha with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Rivka Kahan, and I'm excited to learn Sefer Bamidbar with you. Today we'll be learning Parshat Pinchas. In addition to the narratives and the halachic sections of Sefer Bamidbar, there's an element of the Sefer that's about the Torah's vision for communal life as Bnei Yisrael prepare to enter their land and become a full-fledged nation. We learned earlier in Parshat Naso about how the halachot of Parshat Naso have been interpreted by Mefarshim to represent some of the core values that underlie Jewish communal life. Another aspect of communal life that's addressed in Sefer Bamidbar is how change can take place in the Jewish community when there are individuals who seek it. There are three narratives in Sefer Bamidbar that describe initiatives for communal change: the story of Pesach Sheni in Parshat Bahalotcha, the rebellion of Korach in Parshat Korach, and the episode of Benot Slavchad in our Parsha, Parshat Pinchas. In each case, there is a group of individuals that seeks a change to the status quo or special consideration of their personal situation. The story of Pesach Sheni tells of Anashim Asher Hayut Me'im LeNefesh Adam, people who had contracted ritual impurity associated with death, who asked for special consideration in being able to bring the Korban Pesach nonetheless. The answer given to them was that they couldn't bring the Korban Pesach at its regular time, but they could bring it 1 month later. In the second story, Parshat Korach, Korach and his congregation sought to alter the leadership structure of Bnei Yisrael. The answer to them, of course, was simply no. In the third case, in our Parsha, Benot Slavchad seek to alter the inheritance laws to allow them, as the sole inheritors of their father, to inherit his portion in the land, although inheritance usually goes through the male line in halacha. Analyzing these three stories in comparison to each other teaches us fundamental ideas about the Torah's approach to communal change and the interplay between the needs of the individual and the needs of the community as a whole. The Torah itself includes linguistic hints that these three narratives are tied to each other. First, there's a phrase that links Pesach Sheni and Benot Slavchad. The group that petitions Moshe in the story of Pesach Sheni makes the argument, Lama Nigara, why should we be held back from bringing the Korban Pesach in its appropriate time? Benot Slavchad use almost the same words in their claim, Lama Yigara Shem Avinu, why should our father's name be taken away? In fact, these are the only two places in all of Tanakh that this combination of two words appears. Not only that, but the root gara appears in Sefer Bamidbar only in the prakim about Pesach Sheni and Benot Slavchad. This distinctive language of lama nigara or lama yigara demonstrates the intentional connection between the story of Pesach Sheni and Benot Slavchad. There's also a striking connection between the story of Benot Slavchad and Machloket Korach. When Benot Slavchad make their claim to their father's inheritance, they explicitly refer back to Adat Korach. They say, Avinu meit bamidbar, v'hu lo haya b'toch ha'eda ha'noadim al Hashem, b'adat korach ki v'chato meit. Our father died in the wilderness, and he was not among the congregation of those who gathered against Hashem, the congregation of Korach. Rather, he died for his own individual sin. It is striking that Benot Slavchad explicitly bring up Machloket Korach in their petition. And not only that, but the only place in the Torah where the phrase Adat Korach appears outside of the actual story of Korach is here. I want to mention that the way that I found these features of the language connecting the three stories is through the concordance feature at alhatorah.org, which allows one to search phrases of two or three words in Tanakh and also to see a visual representation of how often a given word or phrase appears in each sefer in Tanakh. Why do Benot Slavchad explicitly mention Adat Korach? Mefarshim offer different answers. Ramban suggests that Moshe found Korach's congregation more reprehensible than any of the other rebels in the desert because they impugned him personally. So Tzlafchad's daughters felt it necessary to specify that their family was not part of Korach's rebellion. Other Mefarshim, including Ibn Ezra, Rabag, and Sforno, suggest that they assumed that those who were part of Adat Korach forfeited their possessions and portions in the land. But one could also suggest that perhaps the Torah is drawing a deliberate contrast between the stories of Korach and Benot Slavchad, both narratives of people who sought communal change, but in dramatically different ways. I'll also point out a third interesting comparison and contrast that links these three stories before we go on to analyze the meaning of these parallels. In both the stories of Pesach Sheni and Benot Slavchad, Moshe does not have a ready answer for the petitioners, but has to turn to Hashem for a halachic response. Chazal see this as reflecting well on the petitioners, that they merited to have a part of the Torah taught in their zchut. By contrast, in the story of Machloket Korach, Moshe appears to act independently, without Hashem's direct instructions. He instructs that the Nesiim and Aaron should all bring incense to find out whom Hashem has chosen, and later in the parsha, he states that the leaders of Machloket Korach will die in a miraculous, unnatural manner, even though Hashem has not explicitly commanded either of these things in pshat. Some of Farshim suggest that Hashem really did instruct Moshe to make these declarations, although it isn't written in pshat. But other Mefarshim believe that Moshe actually came up with the test of the Ketoret and the ultimatum on his own. For example, the Ramban says that Moshe came up with the idea of the Ketoret test because he had already seen that Nadav and Avihu died when they brought Ketoret in a halachically inappropriate way. And Ramban says that Batach Moshe ki Hashem mikim davar avdo va'atzat malachav yeshlim. Moshe trusted that Hashem would confirm the word of his servant and perform the counsel of his messengers. This last contrast indicates the common ground shared by the story of Pesach Sheni and Benot Slavchad, in both of which Moshe turns to Hashem for instructions and a halachic response, and the contrast to Machloket Korach, in which the behavior is so egregious that Moshe feels confident to respond completely on his own and trust that Hashem will agree with the test that he establishes. So what are the fundamental reasons that Pesach Sheni and Benot Slavchad are looked upon favorably as instances of requesting communal change, and Parshat Korach becomes the paradigm of a Machloket Shelo L'Shem Shamayim? I'd like to suggest that there are three dimensions along which Pesach Sheni and Benot Slavchad differ from Machloket Korach. The first has to do with respect for religious leadership. Even just by looking at the words in pshat, one can immediately see the difference in how the petitioners approach Moshe. In the story of Pesach Sheni, this is how the Torah describes the group's approach. Vayikrivu lifnei Moshe v'lifnei Aaron b'yom ha'hu, v'yomru ha'anashim ha'hema elav. They drew close to Moshe and Aaron and said to them. Similarly, the story of Benot Slavchad is introduced with the words, Vatikravna Benot Slavchad ben Chifer ben Gila ben Machir ben Menashe l'mishpachot Menashe ben Yosef, ve'ele shmo benotav machla noach v'chagla u'milka v'tirtza, vata'amodna lifnei Moshe v'lifnei Elazar ha'kohen v'lifnei ha'nisi'im v'chol ha'yeda petach o'el moed lemor. The daughters of Slavchad drew near, and they stood before Moshe, and they said. In both of these descriptions, there's nothing disrespectful in the manner in which the groups approach Moshe. They draw near, and they speak, with courage, but also with respect. By contrast, the story of Machloket Korach uses the descriptions Vayakumu lifnei Moshe and Vayikahalu al Moshe v'al Aaron. They rose up before Moshe and they congregated against them. Clearly, the approach of the congregation of Korach is argumentative, provocative, and antagonistic. A second element of difference is found in how the petitioners relate to the halachic system. For this insight, I want to give credit to Rabbi Shua Katz, who pointed this out in a shiur he gave on this topic. Chazal famously draw a connection between the Parsha of Tzitzit, immediately preceding Parshat Korach, and the Machloket of Korach and his congregation. In Chazal's telling, Korach approached Moshe provocatively, asking him if a piece of clothing that is made entirely of tchelet also needs to have a string of tchelet for Tzitzit. When Moshe responded that it does, Korach began to mock him, claiming that this is entirely illogical, and by extension, doubting the entire system of halachic analysis. As Rav Soloveitchik explained in his essay on Parshat Korach, Korach did not understand that the halachic system is based on specialized knowledge and not simply on common sense and personal experience. In the Rav's words, there is to him no inherent redemptive power in the mitzvah, beyond its therapeutic effects, its capacity to evoke a subjective experience. Korach argued, using the mitzvah of tzitzis as an illustration of his point of view, that the blue thread of the tzitzis was meant to make us think of distant horizons, of infinity, and of the mysterious link between the blue sea and the blue sky. If blue, in the case of tzitzis, is able to evoke feelings of godliness, then total blueness of the garment should certainly be able to do so. Those are the words of the Rav. By contrast, Chazal tell us that Benot Slavchad were Chachmanios, Tzidkanios, and Darshanios, wise, righteous, and learned, and that the argument they advanced before Moshe was based on solid halachic reasoning. In other words, the change that they sought was rooted solidly within the halachic system and was based on respect for and identification with halacha. Finally, I think there is a fundamental difference in the way that these two categories of petitioners think about the relationship between the needs of the individual and the needs of the group. Rav Gad Eldad, in an article on this topic, points out that we sometimes overlook that Hashem's response to the Pesach Sheni petition was actually negative. What the group requested was that they receive a dispensation allowing them to bring the Pesach Sheni at its regular time, or the Korban Pesach at its regular time, despite their being ritually impure. Hashem says no to that request. Instead, he allows them to bring the Korban Pesach a month later. Similarly, in the story of the Benot Slavchad, while they're given rights to their father's land, there's also a limitation. They must marry within their tribe so that their tribe doesn't lose out on its portion. In both cases, there is a balance between respect for the rights of the individual and of the group. The message is that the individual is justified in bringing his demand, and the Torah respects the needs and rights of each person. But at the same time, the legitimacy of the individual's claim derives from his belonging to the community as a whole, being a member of Knesset Yisrael. It is only because of that identity that he's entitled to bring a Korban Pesach at all, or to own a portion in the land at all. The Pesach Sheni group may bring their Korban, but only in such a way that their ritual impurity does not impact the Korban Pesach of the whole community. And Benot Slavchad receive their land, but must marry within their tribe so as not to infringe on the rights of their community. This idea of the sanctity of the individual and the group, and the notion that each is dependent on the other, was expressed with incredible power by Rav Soloveitchik in an essay that is published in Days of Deliverance. The Rav wrote the following: Judaism understood very well the greatness of the individual and the greatness of the existential experience of lonely man. It understood that in order to be creative, man should not be completely enmeshed in society. Man is creative because he is an individual, because he is different, because he can be alone and live in the recesses of his personality, unknown to others. God created just one man, Adam. He concluded his covenant with just one individual, Abraham. The first redeemer was a lonely individual, Moses. The two tablets were given to the entire community the first time, but they were quickly shattered. The second set of tablets was entrusted to Moshe alone as an individual. On the other hand, Judaism also understood the greatness of the community, of the existential experience of living in the community and with the community. Judaism saw that complete immersion in oneself leads to serious emotional problems, that egocentricity is not only a moral, but also a personalistic anomaly. The basic virtues, which are at the apex of our ethical hierarchy, compassion, love, sharing in another's travail and distress, are derived from Midat HaChesed, the attribute of kindness. They would lose their significance should the individual live in isolation. Robinson Crusoe could not practice compassion. He could love only one person, himself. The idea that the Rav expresses here so beautifully is the same one that is embodied in the stories of Benot Slavchad and Pesach Sheni. The Torah has total respect for the sanctity of the individual. And at the same time, there is a real moral risk associated with an overemphasis on the individual. The sanctity of the individual and the sanctity of the community are dependent on each other. Both are of infinite value, and neither can retain virtue without being connected to the other. It is clear from the Pshat of the Torah that Benot Slavchad and the Pesach Sheni group fully embrace this balance of respect for the individual and from the group, and for the group, both from their acceptance of the decree with its limitations, and even from the way they initially frame their request. When Benot Slavchad approach Moshe, they repeatedly refer to their father's legacy. They say, Avinu meit bamidbar, v'hu lo haya b'toch ha'eda hanu'adim al Hashem, v'adat korach, ki v'chato meit, uvanim lo hayu lo. Lama yigara Hashem Avinu mitoch mishpachto, ki ein lo bein, t'na lanu akuza b'toch achei Avinu. Our father died in the wilderness, and he was not among the congregation that gathered against Hashem, Adat Korach, because he died for his own sin, and he had no sons. Why should our father's name be taken away from his family just because he doesn't have a son? Give us a portion among our father's brothers. In this claim, they use the word Avinu three times, and the whole thrust of their argument is that they want to carry on their father's legacy and be part of their family chain. In fact, the word Av is used seven times in this short story. It is clear that Benot Slavchad are acting out of a sense of viewing themselves as part of a larger legacy that they respect and to which they feel they belong. In an essay by Refrand, he quotes an idea from the Imre Emes on the intentions of Benot Slavchad. One might question how we know that the intentions of Benot Slavchad were really out of love for Eretz Yisrael and their family legacy, rather than just a desire for their father's inheritance. The Imre Emes points out that Chazal offer two opinions as to who Slavchad was and the nature of the enigmatic sin for which he died. Either he was the Mekoshesh Eitzim, the person who gathered sticks on Shabbos from Bamidbar Tetvav, or one of the Ma'apilim, who sought illegitimately to enter Eretz Yisrael in the wake of Chet HaMaraglim from Bamidbar Yudalid. Either way, he died all the way back in Parshat Shlach. The fact that his daughters did not approach Moshe for their father's inheritance earlier indicates that they weren't interested in all of his possessions and wealth, but only in his portion in the land. Their interest was in being part of this legacy, in being part of the community of Knesset Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael. By contrast, Korach's actions throughout his story indicate unadulterated self-interest, the opposite of a commitment to a community that is larger than himself. As the Ramban says, Korach haya mefateh kol ha-shvatim ki lechvodam rutzeh lachzir ha-avodah lebuchoreihem, ka'asher amar ki kol ha-edah kulam kedoshim, u-moshe b'chachmato gila mitzvon risho l'chol ha-am, ki hu al-kuhunato tzoik. Korach enticed all of the tribes by claiming that he was seeking their honor, to return the service in the Mishkan to their firstborn. As he said, all the congregation is holy. But Moshe, in his wisdom, revealed his hidden wickedness to the whole congregation, that he really was just crying out because he wanted the kahuna. I believe that these three dimensions of difference add up to the distinction between requests for change that are l'shem shamayim and Korach's request, which is considered by Chazal to be the epitome of a machlokes shelo l'shem shamayim. The elements that characterize positive, fruitful efforts at communal change include respect for people in leadership, respect for the halachic system, and respect for the needs and rights of both the individual and the group, without either one overwhelming the other. May we learn from our parsha to build communities that are based on these values. Shabbat Shalom.